Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. We are listening to one of the most iconic success stories here in Dubai, a story that started in a three-bedroom apartment with just 10 people, has risen up to a turnover of 4.7 billion dirhams. This is the story of Euros Group, and with us is the Chief Executive Officer, Deepak Babani. Deepak, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you very much.
For those of you just joining us, Deepak has already walked through how he got his educational background, which was mostly engineering, starting his career with Murphy's, and then joining Jumbo Electronics here in Dubai, where he spearheaded the Sony brand sales across the region, which skyrocketed with the introduction of the Betacam, the beginning of the home videos in the 80s. And then he joined Euros Group, which was just 10 people working out of a three-bedroom apartment and a 6 million dirham turnover. Today, they have a huge staff and a 4.7 billion dirham turnover. So just a slight change over there. How many people do you have working for you now?
1,300
people. So quite a difference from the beginning. That's back right. In the days in Dira.
That's right. So we are in fact moving into a new building, office building of our own, which will be a ground plus 12 story somewhere in the middle of November.
And every room has a plasma screen? Or
most of them.
Most of them do, huh? So, you know, we were just talking about how challenging the business actually is. I mean, I can buy a plasma screen, you know, from five different companies, and, you know, they really just start to haggle down on the price. You're really basically selling a commodity. So, you know, you have to have some very strong business philosophies to survive, or you wouldn't have made it, especially you wouldn't have made it this far. What are some of the key business philosophies, mantras, North Stars that you use to guide yourself through this landscape?
Basically, as Eros, we have been a very strong sales and marketing company. So while we create demand for product, we also try to build up the brand. So always the long-term strategy is whatever brands we take. We try to build the brand so that we do not have to compete with everybody. The brand equity itself helps us to get a slightly better price than the other unknown brands.
The brand, the Euros Group brand, you mean? Or the brand?
No, generally brands in the market.
The
competition markets. So the brands that we handle are Samsung and TCL. In fact, TCL is one of the clear story where we built up a brand from a Chinese brand. And today we command a market share of around 8 to 10% in TCL.
Okay, but I can buy Samsung. If I buy Samsung in Dubai, I have to buy it from Euros Group.
We are the sole distributor.
Exclusive.
Yeah, exclusive.
So that's one of the things you can do to
protect
yourself.
That's right.
Get the what else? I mean, I think the other place, when you have a small margin, you must be very heavily focused on your shared services.
So basically what we did is, as I told you, that our focus used to be mainly on the marketing side, which a lot of people didn't do. So that bought the brand a lot of equity. Besides that, we also put a lot of focus on the services. So, for example, we put a lot of focus on our after-sales service. So we have a service center not only in Dubai, but we have a service center in Abu Dhabi. We have a service center in Al Ain. We have a service center in Sharjah and Fujairah. These are small markets, but when we give a good service to our customers, they tend to come back again and again.
And from a marketing perspective, what kind of things are you using? Television ads, billboards, direct mailers?
In the past, we were using the print media as well as the magazines. Then in between, we also added a lot of television. These days, with the internet getting more and more popular, so we use a lot of social media as well. And in the future, we want to increase our exposure to the social media.
The social media footprint, where you can actually talk to your exact customer directly.
Exactly. So, for example, you know, putting a search engine on Google or you know, for example, Facebook.
Right. So you'll be using Facebook more as you move into it. What are some of the other strategies? I mean, I think logistics must be a huge piece of it.
We turn around a lot of containers every month. We do almost like 200 containers in and out. So almost 440 feet containers. And that's a massive volume that we need to turn around. So automating the logistics, putting up the infrastructure. For example, we didn't have a warehouse in Abu Dhabi. We set up a 10,000 square feet warehouse in Abu Dhabi, which acted as a feeder warehouse. and we would be able to give service to the customer, for example, get his TV installed in 4 hours' time. That definitely helped us.
From the time he purchased it?
Purchases within four to 5 hours, we were able to fix it.
So if I go to your store at 9 a.m., yeah. I can have the TV in before 5?
5 o'clock, yeah.
No way.
We have two cutoff times, but the earliest is about 4 hours. And sometimes we do comply with, you know, special emergency case of customers when somebody says it's a wedding anniversary.
But you have to pay extra for the 4 hours?
No, we don't. We don't charge.
Really?
This is the beauty of the business.
Wow, that's very fast turnaround. That's very fast turnaround. So you almost have, do you have your own logistics company or?
Yeah, we have our own logistics setup. So we have our own trailers. We have 150 pickups that move all around UAE.
How many pickups?
150 pickups that move all around.
150.
That's
so
right.
It's quite something. But you use every minute of your day, though. Is that one of the things that kind of separates? You know, when we look at, you know, you work through your lunch hour. You actually, I remember you telling me that for some clients, for big orders, you literally go and watch the boat or the truck or the plane being loaded.
That was when I was in Jumbo in the initial period. I used to get a lot of customers from Saudi Arabia who would shop at one place most of the time. And if you left them alone, you know, you would lose the business. So what we would do is, you know, take his cash and, you know, book his orders. And then since he would be traveling back to his country in the evening, I would go down to the warehouse and help him to. Of course, these days it becomes difficult, but... That was during the initial period.
But is that one of the, you know, the separating factors, is that commitment just to go above and beyond, to push it right to the limit and you know, make sure that every deal crosses the line?
Yeah, you see, for example, you know, one of the things that we do in our company is customer satisfaction. So, for example, every single complaint that comes to the organization, of course, we don't solve it ourselves, but we see that it's resolved within a certain time frame. And if it's not, then it's brought to our notice. So we regularly monitor this ourselves to see that the customer satisfaction is at the highest level.
I think another one of the big themes that comes out when we look at it is you had a passion and curiosity. So you were always kind of digging your nose into the electronics. How do they work? What's really behind them? You know, looking at your logistics. I think early on in career, you were finagling your way into the boardroom meetings. You know, there was that insatiable thirst for information. Is that one of the tenets of someone who's going to make it up the ladder?
Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, when I was in Murphy, I joined there as a management trainee. So in terms of hierarchy, I was not very high. But I got this opportunity to, you know, be in the board meetings where I saw board proceedings going on, and then got a chance to participate with them for like preparing the agenda, doing the follow-ups on the various activities that were discussed during the meeting. This gave me a lot of perspective how the corporate board operates at the age of 25, 26. So that really was a great help when I got into the corporate world, because I understood how things happen. And the aspiration to get into the corporate world as quickly as possible came in from attending those meetings.
After talking to you and getting to know you, one of the other things that I see in your operating style is you make decisions quickly, not hastily, but, you know, when you look at the information at hand, you don't lollygag in terms of making your decisions. You don't mind being the trigger man.
Exactly. You see, electronics is a business that moves so fast that decisions have been taken by the minute. So, for example, you have a customer for, say, 10,000 mobiles, and you need to lose a dollar or $2. And, for example, if that product is kept in your warehouse for a month, you may lose $5. A decision has to be taken, and it's the timing which is very important. So instead of losing $10,000, you might land up losing $50,000. And therefore, the decision-making process has to be very quick. It's not correct all the time, but 90% of the time, the decision is the correct decision.
So it's almost better to make a bad decision quickly than make a good decision and take a long time to
do it. That's because, you know, this is the way how electronics operates. The price of product always keeps on depreciating. So you need to be very quick at what to do.
It's crazy, right? So a phone comes out, and by the end of the year, it's 50% of what it was.
Exactly.
So if you were holding that in your warehouse, you're dead.
So it's half the price.
You're dead in the water.
Exactly.
It's a very tough business.
Exactly.
People are saying now, too, that the business, because, you know, the players are so large, whereas before you could open up your shop in Dira and you could be in business, but now the barriers to entry are just too big. You know, you have to have the call centers, the warehouses, the infrastructure required is really prohibitive.
You're absolutely right. These days, I would say that the challenges are much more. At the time when we got into the business, things were much easier. From some perspective, of course, the market sizes were small. Today, the market sizes are large, but the entry barriers are much, much more.
Could we possibly see some acquisition here or some conglomeration within the UAE, because, you know, given those barriers to entry, you know, if you acquired one of your competitors, wouldn't that be a huge advantage?
It has not happened so far, but I'm sure that in the future, this is going to be one of the things that acquisition is going to be a part. A lot of people are discussing Intergulf acquisitions, but not UAE based so far. But I'm sure that in the future, we'll see that number of companies will either acquire or merge together.
This is the story of Deepak Babani, the chief executive officer of Euros Group, a 4.7 billion dirham turnover business. He is going to be telling us what he looks for when he hires his top performers, what it takes to make it to the top. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Dubai Eye 103.8. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. We are looking at one of the most iconic success stories in the field of electronic retail sales here in the United Arab Emirates. It's the story of a company that started in a three-bedroom apartment in Dira with just 10 people, and they even had someone working out of their maid's room to make the whole thing happen. Initially, sales were just a mere 6 million dirhams, but as they picked up speed and hit their stride, today they have over 4.7 billion dirhams in sales and 1,300 people, and they no longer work out of a three-bedroom apartment. This is the story of Euros Group, and with us is the Chief Executive Officer, Deepak Babani. Deepak, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you very much.
For those of you who are just joining us, Deepak had done his education in electrical engineering in India and then joined an electrical company, Murphy's, in India, got acquainted with the business, and then joined Dubai in, was it the late 70s or early?
In 78.
In 1978, joined Jumbo Electronics here in Dubai. And after championing the growth of Sony sales with the takeoff of the Betamax when home videos first started to become possible, he rode that wave and then quickly joined Euros Group not too long after that, where, again, when he joined, it was 10 people, and he's grown with the company. He's the chief executive officer, and now it's a much larger animal than we've previously seen. And thanks again for sharing your story with us, Deepak.
Thank you, sir.
What are some of the things that you look for now when you're hiring your senior people or you're hiring people for leadership roles? What are some of the key things?
Besides the usual, you know, the personality and other things that we look at, we also look at the problem-solving capability. So many times we put across case studies to them where we look at how the analysis.
Like if a train is leaving from Abu Dhabi in the night going 70 kilometers and another train's coming from Ras Al Khaimah at 120, what time do they pass each
yeah.
other?
Yeah, more
no,
than
you
that,
don't.
In fact. I mean, they are real life are kind of problems. And then
more
it's
related to electronic
more
sales.
Related to electronic business.
Okay.
And not necessarily electronic, but generally consumer business.
Okay.
So it could be FMCG, it could be consumer business. So, you know, problem that they, you know, we give them a problem and we see how they're able to solve. It's not necessary that all candidates would give the similar answers, but their capability to analyze and implement decision making
on the fly
is one of the critical factors that we look at.
I had one client who would basically give the candidate a case study, and then halfway through the case study would have his supervisor, you know, pseudo supervisor, come in and tell him that, you know, we have another project that we have to do right away on the fly, and then see how he reacts to that. And then so now he has two projects that he has to finish in the same amount of time. And see, something like that. That was pretty exciting.
Not exactly.
See if they can react on their feet and how they...
Not exactly. But of course, besides, you know, besides problem solving, we also look at, you know, the kind of commitment do they have, you know, how do they treat deadlines in the various projects that we give them. Are they ready to work extra hours, you know, whenever it demands. It's not all the time, but whenever, you know, business demands that, are they ready to work extra time. And also, most importantly, that, you know, they look upon joining the company as a long-term growth prospect.
So you know, when you look at the different regions, I think some organizations take talent over loyalty. So, you know, you had GE where they, you know, when Jack Welch was there, they fire the bottom quartile. There's very low, you know, the loyalty is just not really there on the same level as you may find in the East. And on some of my other clients who are very Eastern in their approach, they take loyalty over talent. They'd rather have two or three guys around them that are, you know, deathly loyal to them rather than having the big juicy brain IQs that could, you know, will be there for a year and a half and then take off.
In fact, in our case, what we have done is, you know, I had also studied the aggression of the American and the style of the Japanese. What we have done in Eros is try to work out a combination of these. So many times we have people who... you know, we give them enough time so that, but if they cannot perform, then of course they are fired. But we do not have this hire and fire policy. So we have a combination of aggression as well as loyalty. So we have a mixed bag of both. And I think it works well for us.
Yeah, so...
It's worked so far, it's worked well for us.
So for those of you listening, I guess when you're referring to the Japanese model is work for life. You only have one company for your entire life.
Exactly.
And it's hard to get terminated, whereas in the, you know, publicly traded large cap U.S. business environment, you're not performing. It's very easy to be shown the door.
So we give our staff, we give them some time, and if they still can't come up to our expectations, of course they have to go. So
and they have to go. I almost feel though that if you have someone who's on performance management, that it actually has a huge opportunity cost to the business, because normally it's a top performer who is then dealing with the underperformer. So now you just don't have one person who's not doing their job properly. Now your best guy is working at lower capacity because he's trying to make up and help out these guys who aren't hitting the mark.
What happens is generally over a period of time we weed out, you know, so generally we have performers who are above average. Some of them might be very brilliant, some of them might be slightly brilliant, but across over a period of time the underperformers are weeded out. So that's how we work, and it works up very fine with us.
So in your essence is, you know, to create a high performance organization, you do at times have to let people go, but you try to keep that to a minimum.
That's right.
And I think speaking volumes to that, in the crisis, you didn't let anyone go. So the huge emphasis on your people. Were there any other things that you kind of look for, or you think really separates the top performers from the herd?
I think the most important thing is, you know, whenever you are in any job, you have to take ownership of that, and that's very important. And I think people, when they take ownership, then the factor of passion, the factor of hard work, the factor of commitment all comes in automatically. So once you take ownership, you think it's your business, the failure and success is for you to decide your future. I think then it makes a big change in people and the way they work.
One guy who's fantastic at doing that is Mickey Jagtiani from Landmark Group. I mean, this guy, he is you know, phenomenal. When you talk to his top guys, they really feel like, you know, it's their business. They have that ownership that just, they're just brimming with it. What are some of the, you know, tools in the war chest that you can use to get that feeling and sentiment of ownership within your staff?
In fact, in the year 2000, I realized that we were losing some good people to competition, and we realized that what we couldn't, and many times the business, you know, wouldn't be able to, you know, be able to pay them as much. So what we decided was let's get into a role where management staff gets profit sharing. So you see, they are responsible for the profit, so they themselves will involve themselves into the business. This is something which, in fact, Landmark Group does very effectively. So right. We did this, and it was a great success for us. We saw that the profits of the company went up on a year-to-year basis, only because everybody in the organization, every manager, I'm not saying every manager, but at least majority of the managers took ownership of whatever they did, and they thought this was their own company. So the results were much, much better than, you know, one person taking the ownership of everything in that organization.
It's tough though when you work with incentives, because they can as much work for you as against you. So, you know, if I'm a manager now, all of a sudden I'm keeping my costs low, and I'm now, you know, I have the whip hand out, and my team's doing the work of 10, five people are doing the work of 10. And you know, how do you balance this to make sure that, you know, you're just not slashing costs?
No, every business group, we are divided into 7 or 8 business groups, and every business group has its own P&L besides the total company P&L. So everybody works on his own P&L, but whenever we say, for example, we are doing manpower planning, we intervene and see that, you know, we keep this balance. So many times, if, for example, a certain manager is a little conservative in his approach to manpower planning, we then supplement, you know, our knowledge into that and see that, you know, we do the moderation of the number of people a particular department requires.
What would you say is your advice to anyone who wants to have a successful career? What would you say is some of your final parting gifts to them? And
I would say first, the most important thing is take ownership of what you do. Number one, during the initial phases, I see a lot of people running for money. I think more important is gain experience. Yeah, money is important, but the money will follow as long as, you know, you gain the right kind of experience and move into the right kind of organizations over a period of time. It could be one organization, it could be multiple organizations. But I would suggest that the youngsters should stay in an organization at least for 2 to 3 years so that they understand the potential of the organization. The organization is able to understand their potential and obviously bring out the best in them.
2 or 3 is still a bit short, though, isn't it? Shouldn't it be more 4 or 5?
I would say obviously 5 years. But these days, with the pace at which the markets move and technology moves, I would say, and a lot of people get very impatient, I would say 3 years is the minimum that one should spend one. In the middle of their career, for example, people who are in the middle of their career, say they've had about 10 years experience, they should look at what kind of growth an organization can offer them and how they can match their personal aspirations with the organization aspirations. Obviously, they have to take the SWOT of themselves, how good they are at some things and how, you know, what are the weak points and how they should be able to cover those weak points to reach that position. And if they find that the organization is moving at a slower pace, obviously, then they could look for a change. But otherwise, grow with the organization. And I would say that people who have reached my level of position, I find that a lot of people feel very insecure when they reach at that level. And they are not ready to kind of delegate responsibility to others. I think that's something that one should not do. Because your experience is always adds value to whatever is being done, and that's a big resource, and allow the youngsters to do, you know, to take up the challenges, because they have the energies and you have the experience. So I think a combination of the young experience, the young power, and the experience of the older people like us, combination can work very lethally. So, and this is what I generally practice in my organization. I have a lot of young guys who have great potential to grow into being CEOs. And I like to see that they are groomed to that position as quickly as possible.
Well, Deepak, thank you so much. I wish we had more time, but it was definitely insightful. And I want to thank you for taking the time to share your insights with us.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me at the studio.
And I might have to come by and pick up a couple plasma screens, so we'll see.
Please. Most welcome.
Thank you. That's the story of Deepak Babani, the chief executive officer of Euros Group, a company that started in a 3-bedroom apartment in Deira, is now a mammoth of a player with 4.7 billion in turnover and more than 1,300 staff. So big things start small. Coming up, we're going to hear the story of consultant coach for a cause. Very interesting business model. So stay with us.